Hello, everyone. Rob here. Thanks for joining us this week. Today's episode is going to be a recap, a little post-game, of the Newcastle County Police Accountability Board meeting. It occurred this week on Tuesday, July 16th, 2024. It was very well attended, both in person and online. And Medina Wilson Anton is here with us to talk about it. Medina was there, as was Sophie Phillips, as was Council Member Jay Street Sr., as was County Executive Matt Meyer, amongst other leaders and community members. As you know, this was the first meeting since the viral videos came out of the incident on Route 9 with the young boys who were roughed up by the police for jaywalking. And then, of course, the incident at Royal Farms in Bear on Route 40, where a driver was pulled out of her car and beaten by four officers. So we knew it was going to be a contentious meeting, and we talk about some of the public content and some of the comments and what we got from it. Like it was actually a lot of thoughts, a lot of diversity, and we'll talk about some of that with Medina. But the first thing I wanted to do was read into the record, because this was important to him, and I think it is important to know that people are on this. Mr. Rob Bullock of the Route 9 corridor and of the Civic Association there wanted to read two statements into the record about these two incidents, and he kicked off the public comment section. And so I'd like to read it too, because I didn't know that there were some Newcastle County ordinances from the council that could be applicable here. Now, whether they're allowed to be applicable or whether, you know, all of the police rules at the state level supersede this, who knows? But the community made a statement, and I think it's important to read it into the record. And he will read this into the record at the next council session. And he read this last night at the Police Accountability Board. So I'll begin. Community recommendation. We, the community of the Route 9 corridor, strongly recommend that progressive discipline as outlined in Newcastle County Police Directive 26.2.C.1 be administered by the Chief of Police and coordinated by the Professional Development Unit to be given to Officer Garino and accompanying officers. The community recommends a minimum of remedial training that exists or needs to be created, in which a strong emphasis is on confrontational de-escalation techniques, and outlined and enforced by Ordinance 20-026. Specifically, on June 9th, 2024, Officer Garino, G-A-R-I-N-O, and accompanying officers were observed by the community of using excessive force by unprofessional abusive language, stopping, frisking, and handcuffing, and zealously detaining our children for jaywalking, when a warning would have sufficed. Instead, they induced abject fear and intimidation, which diminishes the trust and confidence that the community has been desperately trying to establish with good-intentioned officers. The recommendation will be read to the County Council at the next meeting and be part of the record. Number two, community recommendation. We, the community of the Route 9 corridor and the Route 40 corridor, strongly recommend that progressive discipline as outlined in Newcastle County Police Directive 26.2.C.1 be given to officers that were involved in the Royal Farms traffic stop in Bear, Delaware. We anticipate the Chief of Police will administer this action and direct the Professional Development Unit to offer minimal remedial training with an emphasis on confrontational de-escalation techniques during routine traffic stops, as outlined in Ordinance 20-075 and 20-076. Specifically, on June 29, 2004, four officers were observed by the community of using excessive force during a routine traffic stop. Instead of issuing a simple citation, the immediate officer decided to operate outside of his professional duty and become personal with the driver. He forced her out of the vehicle when she indicated that she would comply. The officer threatened her with a punch in the face. Another officer punched her in the face while she was on the ground. Another officer used a knee hold on her back, which is clearly a violation of Ordinance 20-075. And because the other officers didn't safely intervene verbally or physically, they violated 20-076 article as well. Statement. We recognize the difficulty of an officer to do his job and to return to their families at night. But the community should also be protected from rogue officers within their rank and file. This is why the county council created these ordinances to prevent this type of situation from occurring. Coming home to our family's safety is equally important. Yeah, so when Bill and I were in here a couple weeks ago talking about, or a week ago talking about, like, Biden's incapacity and stuff like that, and also, like, these contradictions about, like, yeah, democracy's at risk and we won't have another election, but Gavin Newsom's going to run in 4 years.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
There's all these, like, contradictions. Right. And again, more contradictions after this assassination attempt. Because, you know, guy gets off some rounds, gets near him anyway. But everybody has to come out and be like, oh, God, we can't do this. This is not how we operate. Well, is the man Hitler,
or
who's
not
going to be a right dictator and cancel elections for the rest right of our lives?
Or is he, I mean, our political then, opponent that we have to pause all political campaign communications until, you know, his ear recovers?
But, I mean,
I'm confused.
I just can't believe I was up here working, in my little den, because I can't go outside because the sunlight hurts my eye, and so I noticed that online almost like as it happened, because I got an alert on Twitter or something, and it took about an hour for me to realize like at least what happened, like okay, one of the rounds went through the teleprompter, glass cut his ear, and I think they saw another one whiz past his head and hit the guy that died. And then they killed the guy on the roof. Okay, fine. They tried to get him. They didn't get him. Who cares? But he was about, 20 centimeters from exploding his head like a pumpkin. That would have been really something. Because that would have been, I mean, the way that stuff comes out, you know, I saw it, videos were online 2 minutes after.
Yeah.
And then 10 minutes after that, everybody's videos who were shooting the rally were on. I mean, so it was one of those, like, weird things, like, almost like sci-fi when I was a kid. Like, there's going to be some time where the president's going to get his head popped like a bubble, and then there's going to be 75 different angles of it.
Yeah, I mean, that's crazy.
Because we were inches away from that.
Yeah, and we're all, I feel like, very... Not to sound corny, but like I feel like we are very desensitized to like mass violence on our screens. So like the immediate, like, yeah, people were like freaking out at first, and then it was like immediately comedy. And like I thought a lot of stuff was funny too, and I'm just like, what's wrong with me? Like, why is this? I mean, probably because he was fine, you know. Like, I'm sure it would be much different if he'd actually been injured, but like, man, Twitter's still free, and like, it's hilarious.
Yeah,
I mean,
look,
some of the tweets.
Here's
were just...
the thing: the reason it's funny too is because like this is the what happened in the nation that the people who are there are pleading for. Like, they want.
Right.
They
right.
want the Wild West.
Right.
They want to do violent rhetoric. They don't mind doing violence.
Even the guy who got killed.
The guy who got killed, and this was creepy because, as I said, I was in the studio, so I had studio monitor headphones on, and they're very good. And so I was texting you guys, and I could hear, I could count the shots. I could hear people talking because the mic was picking up other stuff that I could then hear.
Yeah.
And the right before that last single shot, which was probably the last sniper shot, you can just hear this blood-curdling scream.
Yeah.
And you realize that person's probably sitting next to the person who just got his head exploded. And she's screaming as you would scream.
Right.
But everyone else was just like...
chilling.
Didn't really react.
Yeah.
Like, didn't hit the ground. Even as the Secret Service came out to push him down into the ground and cover him up, the people behind him were just like, wow, this is crazy.
Yeah, like, some of them were...
like, hit the dirt.
Kind of like, they were, like, leaning over a little bit, but, like...
why do they not know, again, and maybe it was because of the way that I listened to it first, like, you hear the three rounds and Trump grab his ear, and I'm like, those were three AR-15 rounds. You could tell, I mean, it just, that's the way an
this
AR-15.
This is the crowd that should recognize
that.
I'm sorry.
Like, you could hear.
They should know the difference between fireworks and gunshots, because they pop them both off all the time.
Yeah, that first volley of, like, three, I'm like, oh, that somebody's firing an AR-15. And then when he grabs his ear, I'm like, oh, my God, did they fucking shoot him in the head? And then there's another volley and a single shot. And then he gets up. And as soon as he gets up and puts his fist up, I'm like...
you could hear him, though. Could you hear him say, wait, wait?
Yeah.
I was like, wow.
My shoes.
That was a masterclass.
Yeah, he said, wait, because he wanted to make sure he had his shoes on.
And he wanted to walk out of there triumphant.
Yeah, he did. You have to give him... again, this is the thing.
Credit where credit's
due. He survived... in his mind, he survived an assassination attempt. He probably didn't know what hit his ear. And so he's, you know, but to have that, like, sense of scene and sense of, like, how to handle himself.
He is always on.
It's incredible. It was that part of it was incredible.
Yeah. So, say goodbye to elections, Michael, because this is the last time you're ever going to see one.
comrades and friends, hello. this is an interesting episode for us, not you. It will be very interesting for you when it's done. I think it's like, is it 5:30? Is it 5:30 in the morning? What the fuck time is it?
It's like 8:30.
So here's what happened, friends.
It's been sunny for like 4 hours.
No, don't say that. So last night, I attended the Newcastle County Police Accountability Board meeting at the Route 9 Library. It was, going to be a spirited affair because there's been videos released, viral videos online, of police violence and brutality. It was an interesting meeting, and we're going to talk about it. But the reason it's like the crack of dawn here is because I tapped Medina on the shoulder and said, can you come in and talk about this tomorrow? I want to release it as quickly as possible for Friday. Today's Wednesday. And Medina said, yeah, I'm free until noon. I'm like, okay, yeah, we'll do something in the morning. I'm thinking like, first time it popped into my head, I'm going to be honest, was 10:30 a.m. Just to be clear. And you were like, well, I'm dropping Isaiah off at the train station at 8. And I'm like, the train station is like 10 minutes from my house. I'm like, so I guess you mean like 8:15? You're like, yeah. I'm like, here we go. So here we are. We're in the studio at the crack of dawn. Medina is here. Hello. Thank you for coming in, by the way.
Yeah. Thanks for the invite.
Much appreciated. Carl is here. He came here. I didn't think he would do it. I wouldn't have done it if I was him. But he's got a lot of things going on. He's probably, like, changing locations every 45 minutes. Like, burner phones. Do you have a burner phone?
I have a phone that's been burned, if that counts.
Hey, I've got one of those.
So, hello. This is your Highlands Bunker podcast. And we're going to talk about this police meeting, whatever you want to call it. Thank you for coming to the meeting last night. I mean, what was your impression of it? Just before we start talking about specifics, like, you know, there was a lot of public comment. It went well. It sort of devolved, but there was some good stuff at the end as well. What did you just think? Did you think it was productive?
I feel like it's too soon to know. But, you know, I appreciate that you guys told me that it was happening. This was my first time attending the Route 40 Royal Farms incident is in my district. It's actually like right outside my neighborhood. So I walk to that like CVS and Royal Farms all the time. So when the video came out, I recognized it like immediately. And I think it was like June 30th that morning. I think somebody texted me or messaged me and was like, are you guys seeing what's going on with this police brutality? And I was like, no, somebody sent it to me. And then somebody sent it to me. And that was, you know, just a bystander's video at the time. That was what kind of went viral. And so I reached out to some folks and like filed a complaint and like just kind of started figuring out what can I do in my role. So I really appreciated getting the heads up that this meeting was happening. I put that on my calendar. And like I said in the meeting, you know, it's an issue that's important to me and it's important to my community. But when you see supposed public servants pulling a woman to the ground and punching her repeatedly in the head in your district, you know, you probably should show up and like speak out against it and do whatever you can. And I feel like the public comment was spot on. I kind of expected to hear some back the blue people, but it seemed that if they were there, they were very quiet. I felt like there was a diversity of like experiences that were shared, people that were not the victims ever of like police misconduct or, you know, aggression, still spoke up and were like, my neighbors feel scared and my, you know, my community members are hurting. People talked about it from like a public health perspective. People talked about years ago and how they still are traumatized from it, how it's impacting the next generation. So I felt like it was really productive on the community side. What I don't know about is like how it's going to go from now, right? So because it's really like an advisory board. It's not...
They can make recommendations.
So one of the recommendations that came up a few times from community members last night was for the two bills that we passed last year around Leobor, that those be first steps. And that's what had been said at the time from the sponsors of the bills and people who were proponents of it. I didn't support them. But they were like, this is a first step, guys. Don't worry. We're going to come back. We're going to do more. This is just the first step. And that was kind of a theme last night, I think, was, you know, you said it's a first step. Where's the second and third and fourth steps? Like, you guys need to start working on that now. So I'm excited to, you know, stay involved in this topic with the community members. I plan to attend the next meeting, which is going to be closer to my district, and try to, when we come back in January, introduce legislation that will be those next steps that the community is asking for.
Yeah, I think I took away basically the same. The next event is in August, and it's at Leisure Elementary School, which is in your district, right?
Yes. Yeah. No, it's not in my district, it's like right across, and like a lot of kids that go there are from the community.
Right.
So.
The plan is to have it won't be a full committee meeting. It's a public forum, so it'll be a little different than what happened last night. My colleague, Misty Siemens, is going to do like a Know Your Rights sort of session.
Yeah.
Answer questions, things like that. Have like interactive. So that's going to be fun. I'm excited for that.
Yeah.
Not only is she excellent at the different parts of her job, but she's really good at connecting and doing that kind of stuff.
Misty's a rock star. It's like today's Wednesday. Saturday was the Network Delaware social change summit. Is that right? I said it right this time. And she was on a panel that I was able to catch, and she just was amazing. I mean, I already knew she was amazing, but she was getting like practically standing ovations. Like when she's awesome. So I'm really excited she's going to be the one who's doing that. But when they mentioned that there was going to be the Know Your Rights training, I was like, all right, we need to fly her and we got to get this out to the community. Because part of what came up in the conversation last night, which I found to be, I'll say, illuminating, was with the incident that happened in my district, the beginning of the conversation, the cop's like, that's on that's recorded. The cop is telling her, I put my lights on. You didn't pull over immediately. And she's like, I didn't feel comfortable doing that. Like where we were, I didn't feel comfortable pulling over right there. So I came somewhere. She came to a parking lot where she thought, you know, reasonably that she would be safer. And so that was part of the conversation at this meeting where people were like, you know, we're told to do that. But then when we do that, now it's a problem. Now it's like we're evading arrest. And the advice that was given was like, well, yeah, well, what you should do is put your blinkers on, slow down, motion that you see them, and then do that. And like,
well, then it was like dial 911 and explain to them.
Dial
like,
911?
Did you hear him say that?
Yeah, but I'm because like looking like, around like, are you guys serious right now? Yeah, so well, when the cops pull me over, I should be calling 911 that we know is overrun already. And being like, yeah, I see this guy's behind me, but I don't feel comfortable pulling over right here. So I'm going to pull over. Like, who knows to do that? You know, like, I never knew to do that.
Yeah. And the first part of the exchange about these issues, and they also we also discussed the issue on in the Route 9 corridor off of Route 9. Where the cops jumped like a group of kids.
Yes.
For like jaywalking, but like wrestled somebody to the ground because they just wanted to know, you know, they weren't compliant. So that was brought up too. And it's funny because
for the listeners, there was air quotes around that compliant.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I forget they can't see me doing that.
Yeah, they weren't compliant.
I tried to pause and it was like, is that resisting? Well, it's passive. We talked a lot last night about passive resistance.
Passive resistance.
So you can. I'm not even going to get into that. But it's another like I love furtive moves. I love passive resistance. I love blading. I always forget the name of it, but it's like when you walk like you have a gun. They made up a name.
I thought that was a callback to what everybody was saying Trump did.
Oh, that's right.
They were just like, he's a WWE guy. Yeah.
So the first part that the council itself and the members of the council were able to ask questions directly. Now, Bond was there, who's one of the police ex officio members, and it's usually supposed to be like the head of the Newcastle County Police. I forget the guy's name, big goofy white guy. He's not there. They bring in the president of the Fraternal Order of Police, Captain Jamie Leonard. Now, look, I'm sure people already listened to this since these phones are probably tapped. But this guy, he's a fucking bozo. This is not Medina's... she's not going to talk about it that much.
Talk about what?
Well, you had an exchange with him at the end.
Oh yeah, I was planning to talk about that. Why not?
Oh, perfect. Because you know what? It'll lead into something else I want to talk about. But I'll just say this: the council asked their own questions, and most of the answers from these two cops were like a filibuster, or they were like these general explanations, like Medina said, of this is how you pull over: you wave your hand out the window and call 911 and all of this stuff. And you're thinking, like, but we saw the video. Like, they can't, you know, obviously can't speak to, like, the investigation that's... Again, I did the investigation that's going on. I did that again.
That's in quotes.
Yeah, that's also in quotes. So they just talked in, like, sort of generalities and filibustered and talked about, how de-escalation isn't really a policy, but it's intertwined into the other policies. That was a funny
one. Hashtag not all cops.
Yeah, it's intertwined. Hashtag intertwined. And then we got to the public comment, and I thought it was excellent. I do want to point out a couple fun ones. You could point out a couple ones that got to you.
Okay.
The first one I'm going to mention.
You're going to pick the one that I would have picked probably.
The veterans guy?
Yeah, Joe Walsh.
Joe Walsh. So, okay, so let's talk about
Joe,
it.
I love Joe, man.
And the thing is, he's very friendly with the cops. He is not in no way sort of anti-police. But he's a wild guy, but he's a wild white guy, and he's kind of, you know, he gets wound up like I do. And so I know that I can also say stuff. Like,
he was dropping gems, man.
He's and so you don't know how it's going to go. And he said, "We can't have. We need the police. And since we need you, you cannot behave in this manner." He said, "You know, this is out of control. These are kids. Nobody trusts you. We can't. You know, we can't have a society like this. And we need you." It was almost him imploring in them to like stand up to what we actually need.
He was kind of doing a what they used to call a compliment sandwich.
Yeah.
Right? Where it was like, "We need you," and it ended with, you know, "We need you," but in the middle was some good.
So he was like, "When I was a kid, you know, the cops, they were like these tall, skinny, goofy guys.
They didn't look like you."
He's like, "What are you all on steroids?" And I'm like, I looked at Bill, and Bill looked at me, and I was like, "Dude, this guy, I said, let him cook."
Right? He was like, "They didn't look like you." And like the audience, I mean, perfect delivery, because the audience is like, "What's he mean by that?" And he's like, "They were tall and skinny."
He was like, "You guys look like you're all on steroids."
Yeah, you guys look like you're like, and he had a really good point, right? Where he was like, "You're coming into these communities like you're going to war," right? Like he talked about how they're all like, and he mentioned, because he's a vet, he was like, you know, a lot of them are vets, and they're coming into communities like Dunleith, like they're going overseas into like enemy territory or something.
Valid He's
point.
Correct. Yes. Yeah. And he got a rousing applause. Of course, he was fantastic. I'm sorry, I stole yours. No, I'll let
no,
you go.
No, no, no. It was your idea to do it anyway. But I mean, he was awesome.
Yeah.
Who else? I really enjoyed a woman named Crystal. I didn't catch her last name. Who was talking about how they're public servants, and she talked about her personal experience. Being like mistaken identity and being thrown to the ground as a woman, thrown to the ground by, you know, male officers who then beat her up with no evidence that she was any person of interest. And even if she was, it's like, why are we throwing people to, like, why are we just beating people up? But she talked about how she works in healthcare, and she made a really good parallel around, I think it was a callback to something that Bond had said, maybe.
Yes.
Right. And like bias, and, well, are you being compliant or not? And she's like, okay, so if you're in the hospital and you know, and somebody's like not compliant, do you just not care for them? Like, is that how that's supposed to work?
Yeah. She's like, that doesn't work in any other.
Yeah. Like, why do you have a different standard than every other, you know, profession, basically? I was like, yeah. She's like, imagine if that was, you know, standard operating procedure, like, patient asks questions, patient's not getting treated now. Like,
yeah.
It's just ridiculous.
Patient's uncooperative, I punch them in the stomach.
Right.
Susan, Nurse Susan has actually talked about this. This is real for people who aren't in healthcare. Nurse Susan, very notably, is married to me, but also worked in an emergency room in a regional hospital in Berlin, Maryland. So, you know, when there was significant stuff happening in, like, Ocean City, like, big resort town, it would come there. So she's been in some wild situations. Yeah, and people have hit her, tried to bite her, spit on her, tried to grab her, all kinds of stuff. And she's not armed. And not only that, she's not legally allowed to beat the shit out of them.
Right.
So, like, we can operate society without the extreme violence. And it was notable to me because he said, going back to the first thing, I watched one of the police that were there in the audience walk out with a huge vest on and like 20,000, yeah, like huge, you know, stick and flashlight and gun and radio. And yeah, it looks like a soldier.
Yeah.
It looks like a little soldier.
Yeah.
It's just weird.
But we're supposed to play basketball with them. How are you going to get cops wearing all that?
What are we doing here? Yeah, that's the thing is when people talk and then you get the reality.
Yeah.
It's a complete, it's two different universes.
Well, okay.
You
know? One of my other favorite moments was when Bond got up and like the room was set up in like kind of an interesting way. Like the panel was facing us, but then we were all in rows and like we couldn't really see them. And like public comment was then directly across from the cops, which I thought was perfectly placed because I don't think anybody who stood up was directing any of their like emotion to any of the other panel members. But at one point, I think it was after Mickey spoke, Bond gets up and he's like, nah, she really struck a nerve for him. He gets up and he starts like pacing and like walking around like he was like delivering a keynote or something. And and he's like, yeah, we make mistakes. We don't always get it right. But raise your hand if you've never made a mistake. And like the crowd was just like, bro, what?
Yeah.
What? And he's like, and then he at one point he said something where he was like, you know, yeah, there's bad cops out there, but I don't know anybody who, and then he was like, well, I don't know anybody. Like, he had to, like, qualify what he was going to say, because it's like, you can say you don't know a single law enforcement officer who, like, has ill will or who doesn't love the community that they serve or whatever. But, like, pretty soon we're going to find out that there is one, you know?
I guess you didn't know him. Or it's, so he kind of, like, qualified him. It could be her.
He, like, paused, and then he was like, who intentionally sets out, and I was like, ah, oh, okay, all right, okay.
Yeah,
all
yeah,
right,
yeah.
Okay.
You got to get, well, that's the other thing, too, that Bill and I talked about when we talked about the video and what they did last night. Everything's fucking caveat after caveat.
Oh, yeah.
You know, everything is like, as long as we can carve out, you know, something. It's actually one of the commenters made this point, you know, there's what the law allows when it passes a certain threshold and what you should do.
Right. Yeah, that's like a really good
if you're like a reasonable person, like just
I think
because,
that was one of the people on the board, right?
Dr. Whittle,
Whittle.
Dr. Tanya Whittle.
Yeah,
I think it may have been her.
Maybe if it doesn't reach that threshold, then you still talk to the officer and say, "Hey, don't do that. Try this.
Yeah,
try
but
that.
They don't. Yeah, they haven't. But they have no interest in do. And I don't mean interest like they're not interested, but they have no institutional political interest to do that. Interesting point at the end, when Bond was getting off on another fucking screed, talking about, well, if we open, when he was talking about bad cops, he's like, I wish we would open the books and you'd see that there's not a lot of them or whatever. And we're like, well, open the books. He's like, well, that's against the law, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, so you can't open the book. It's just
yeah.
like,
but also,
the caveat is only the law.
Shout out to Bond, though, for being like, we need to fix things. And like conceding that, because I don't think that I honestly don't think he realizes just how much energy and effort and resources goes into obstructing those very pieces of legislation. Like, Jamie was very quiet, like, the entire meeting. And that was bugging me because, like, I know, having tried to do legislation and watching my colleagues try to pass bills that would reform how we do policing in the state, that they fight tooth and nail on, like, everything. And so at one point towards the end, so, okay, this I found interesting, too. They're like, we're going to open up public comment again. And like, if anybody who's already spoken wants to speak again, we're going to let that happen. And I was like, oh, snap. All right. Well, let me raise my hand again. And Rep Phillips was talking about her experience trying to get the Homeless Bill of Rights passed and how much pushback she got from law enforcement. And like Captain Letter just sitting there real quiet. And I was like, you know what? I want to know what he thinks, because Bond felt the need to like stand up and speak, but he's retired. I want to hear from the current representative who's sitting here. What does he think? So I mentioned that like I introduced HB 445 this year, which was an amended version of HB 145, which didn't go anywhere because the police didn't support it and DOJ didn't support it. And I was like, you know, are you guys going to work with us on this stuff, or are you just going to send out a letter saying you're against it? And he gets like all like, I mean, dude was red the whole meeting, but he got even redder. And he was like, that it wasn't just, we didn't just say we didn't agree with it. There was a lot of nuance and we shared the exact nuanced reasons for why. I'm like thinking in my head, shout out to you. Yeah. Cause when I said letter, I meant sentence. Yeah. Like, I think most people here know what a letter is, that it's got multiple paragraphs, probably has points in it. But the first sentence is just like, we, and then it's like a bunch of groups, including like DST, like literally everybody that has anything to do with policing, we all together do not support this legislation, and here's why. And was there a conversation with those people about it? No. And am I open to having that conversation? Yes. Yes, I am. But what's really frustrating is like people will come up to me afterwards and be like, hey, like you should go out for coffee and like talk it over with them and stuff. And like I have had coffee with so many people, and private conversations often are mischaracterized afterwards, and it's very frustrating. Because, and so like I thought it was really important for us to get that on the record in public with the community there to hear, yes, we do intend to work with you on, you know, protecting homeless people's rights and on protecting Delawareans' civil rights and privacy. Yeah, we do want to work with you on that. We just have specific concerns. Okay, so we can work on those specific concerns then. But I mean, I'm not super optimistic about that happening until we get some different people down there, because it seems like right now, if you want to reform law enforcement in any way, if it doesn't have 100% sign off by law enforcement, legislators won't support it. And it's just, it's nuts.
Yeah, and I'd like to just use one more example so people understand what we're talking about. This guy, Jamie Leonard, who's the head of the FOP, lobbies legislators to make sure we don't get any police reform. Exhibit 2. We talked about this earlier this year. Part of the thing we were doing was trying to put a bill together that would allow criminal defense attorneys to get police misconduct records, called a judicial records bill, because these things wouldn't be public, but they would at least be available in a trial setting. Civil attorneys get this in the civil setting for police misconduct. And the guy sitting there last night with his big cherry head, because he did get red. It looked like one of those old cartoons where when they get mad, it's like a thermometer going up and then go
steam. Blah, you know?
Yeah.
Kettle steam.
He has specific conversations with interested legislators to basically scare them into slow playing or burying these bills in committee or whatever. That's what he's there for. And so I actually walked out a few times to have side conversations with people before they left, because you know, some people in the, you know, community members and stuff left. But I was happy to step out, because just him being there, knowing what we know, it's an insult to the community, really, for him to be up there. You know, and to tell you, when I walked back in and he was like, well, we had certain nuances of the bill that we didn't like. We don't have anything against the unhoused community or whatever. And again, he's using like leftist language or like liberal language when he just doesn't, he actively lobbies against everything. Yeah, they may have, they had reasons. I'm going to do it again. Reasons. Who cares? They don't want to do it. And that's it.
Yeah. And I think until we force them to have those conversations in public, and until we have, or we have different people in office who, you know, don't say, I need this box checked, and this box being law enforcement approval 100% to support something, that's, we're not going to get reform. We're just not. Unfortunately, like there was one instance where I think it was Bond who was sharing, like there was a guy in the force who was like doing some kind of terrible behavior. I forget what the specific example was. And other law enforcement officers noticed. Other officers noticed and like reported it. And the guy got like fired or whatever. And Councilman Street spoke up and was like, but he got his pension. And like Bond was like, well, that's not, that wasn't our call, and like whatever, that's the law. I think that was like the instance where it was like, well, that's out of our control kind of thing.
That's
like,
exactly
okay,
what he said.
But it's not though, right? Like it's only, it's that way because people have chosen to keep it that way. And if we were to come back next year and try to amend that, like somebody who brutalizes people and is found guilty of it doesn't get a bunch of money on the way out, Do you think they would support it? Or would there be a lot of nuanced reasons for why they don't? I'm making
a
face.
The money thing. This was another issue that came up that was financial based was I can happily tell Lex that somebody came up and had read his piece about the Milford PD having to pay out another six figure thing. And he had run months ago. He had compiled a bunch of different civil payouts from a bunch of different police departments that were like in maybe 10, 11 different things. And it was tons and tons of money. And somebody said, you know, like, do you guys even care about this?
Why should they? They're not. It's not like it's coming out of their paychecks.
Correct. Because they're going to they get paid out. They get paid out and they pay out. But everything's just kept secret.
The only people who it's like really twisted. It's not accountability at all. You could say it's justice for the victims. Maybe it's, you know, a step towards justice for them. But the entity that's held accountable in these situations is the public. That's our money that should be going to libraries and schools and other things like that. And it's going to one person or a family because we have not reformed how people are doing policing in our community. And like, I don't know why I hadn't thought about it that way until a couple weeks ago. One of my colleagues mentioned it and they were just like, well, yeah, there's no incentive for them to really change their behavior because they are not the ones who are held accountable when we do these payouts. And that kind of broke my brain.
Yeah, they're off scot-free. It's like, you know, somebody else is paying their protection money.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's sick. So a couple other highlights for me, and I don't remember which commenter mentioned this, but again, it was a response to the way something was characterized, because there's all these caveats and weird euphemisms and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
For the Route 9 situation, those were teenagers, right? They were like 16, 15, 16.
I'm not sure the ages, but yeah. Teenagers.
They're basically teen. Yeah, they were definitely teenagers because they weren't even 18, I don't think, mm-mm, because somebody pointed out they're not young men. They were boys set upon by grown adults, grown armed adults. So let's just be clear. If we can't even be clear about what happened, we're in like a bad place. Because there were teenage boys that were set upon by a group of armed men.
Yeah. And that was, I'm pretty sure that was Christina Kelly who made that point.
Yep.
A white, you know, community member, but who was bringing attention. And I don't know if that got across to Captain Leonard. Probably Bond understood what she was saying. But like the adultification of black children, the like dehumanization of black children, it's real. And somebody else made a point like that where they were like, I think it may have been Councilman Street, who was like, you know, if it was adult officers and they were black and it was white children in a white affluent community, we wouldn't be talking about it the same way. We would have reformed the system. Just like if it was a white woman who was pulled out of her car, thrown on the ground by a bunch of black men and punched in the head repeatedly, we'd have a different conversation about it.
That was incorrect. I do want to give a special shout out to Councilman J Street. I'll tell you the story, and then I think you'll think it's funny. I was sitting with Mercedes Watson from the Delaware Center for Justice. Dave Beaver also gave comment from the Delaware Center of Justice. Thought that was great that everybody came out. But it was beforehand, and I saw coming up behind me was council member Jay Street. Now, as I've said probably before, this guy's a Wilmington OG, and you know that I have a certain affinity to like the old fighters, and like, and he still like he still went up there and gave a great speech about, like, when he said that, he's like, you know, if three black cops jumped on some kid in the Highlands,
right,
there'd be
a race war.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, like, there would be new laws. The legislature would come into special session to figure out what to do.
What happened? How did this Highlands teen get
brutalized,
you know, beat up
and,
by
targeted? Whatever. It would be totally different. We wouldn't be calling them young men.
No. So I did say, as when he came up and sat down, I introduced myself. I had introduced myself maybe a couple other times, but he would never remember me. And I said, oh, it's funny, we were just talking about your son, because J Street Jr. is going to actually play at the August event that we're throwing for sort of police misconduct awareness.
Oh, okay.
Hanif's group, Good Vibes in the Park,
is putting on
a big show in August on the stage there at Clifford Brown Walk. And one of the program will have speakers, so Keandra McDowell, Lakeisha Nix, some others we're going to keep in our back pocket. But also it'll have a live full band brief set from J Street Jr. It's a very rare live full band set of J Street Jr. So it's going to be at the Clifford Brown Walk on the 23rd. So I told J Street, I was like, we're just talking about your son. He's going to play in this show for us that we're doing at Clifford Brown Walk. He was like, he just did like a sigh. I guess everybody probably says shit to him like that. So I go back and he just did that. Right? So, right. It was just funny. And so afterwards, he had spoken and I think the chair, Kim Eppenheimer, said that, you know, he didn't have the 2 minutes. He could go on as long as he wanted.
Yeah.
So it's like the Kowalko rule. You just go, so, you know, whatever. and he was great. And so I said, hey, it was nice meeting you. I said, by the way, I do something in Wilmington. You know, obviously, I said, I would love to talk to you sometime, either on the mic or off the mic. You know, I'm a big Wilmington guy. I have a lot of respect for you. And he looked at me like, all right, yeah, we'll talk. And I could just see in his eyes, he was like, I'm not talking to this white guy. Yeah. Fuck this guy. Like, I could tell. And that's why it just made me love him even more that he looked at me like that. You know what I mean? He was like, who the fuck is this guy?
Well, he's not. There's no airs or what's the expression for that? He doesn't put on like
the pretense. There's no pretense.
He's just like, he's himself. Shout out to him.
Yeah. Shout out. And again, when his remarks were great. And it was just cool to see him there. And again, shout out to other sort of community leaders, we'll say, with you that came out, because Sophie Phillips did come out and engage about the Homeless Bill of Rights. I thought that was great. Obviously, Misty and Dave from DCJ was really great that he came out with Mercedes.
Yeah.
Misty and Kevin O'Connell from ODS were out. Yes. So, you know. I was also happy to see a bunch of people in my working group come out. So the gentleman whose strong recommendations from his community group that read Rob Bullock that I'm going to read after this, he's in the working group. Another woman who gave public comment is in the working group. It's just fun. It's just fun to see like people we're working with to like. Bring them back into this issue, come back into it a little bit.
That's awesome. You guys are doing really good work.
Yeah, it's fun.
People engaged. Like, I really do feel like that's the only way we're going to make progress on this is we need the community to stay engaged beyond, you know, the incidents that happen. Like, it has to be sustained involvement. So, shout out to you guys for making that happen.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't do it all by ourselves, obviously. I mean, It happened, and a lot of it just sort of happened organically. There were people there from the pro-Palestinian movement who have had, you know, significant police contact. I mean, as I said, the police are cracking down on dissent, so they're getting arrested more often and with different kinds of charges. They came out because they have a stake in this too. And, so it was just great to see. And actually, one of the commenters mentioned the diversity of the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Very diverse, you know, maybe 3-4 dozen people in the room. And there was a lot of people on. Oh, Frank Cook, Cookie, we saw you. We saw you on the Zoom. We saw you on the screen. Well, I didn't. Bill did, and he told me, because I can't see that shit. But there was a large contingent on Zoom of a couple dozen, too.
Yeah.
So there.
And some people spoke online, like some public comment was online and stuff.
Yep.
Do you know, I'm assuming that this is all going to be, like, archived online somewhere?
I believe it is. Especially that's why I was like nice to be in that room because it has all the AV stuff in there.
Yeah, yeah, very nice. I mean, the Route 9 library.
The Route 9 library is very nice. Yeah, I mean that's yeah. Because last time there was a meeting at the Route 9 library, I believe it was in the Black Box Theater. This was in like a conference room, not too far down that hallway, if you're familiar.
Yeah.
And it was totally, yeah, it was totally all AV, huge flat screens and podiums, all the microphones. It worked really well there. I have to find out from Kaylin Richards, is the Newcastle County employee who's like the liaison for the board to the government.
I thought she's not with DCJ.
No, she left DCJ to do this.
Oh, okay.
And actually, DCJ is still in looking for a policy director. So if anybody is interested, let me know. I can get your resume up. Yeah, so she left DCJ to do this.
Well, that's another shout out. She did a phenomenal job. Like, it's a lot to. I have staff meetings before, like, running a meeting where you got people in person, you got them online, you got to, like, monitor a chat, you got to time everybody's comment. She did a really good job.
Yeah.
It was really well done, very smooth event.
Yeah, and I have to say, it was very, very well run considering the context. And also, I give Kim some credit, too, because I think it helped like, I know people don't want to hear it, and somebody actually made a comment about it, which I think is perfectly fair criticism. But the fact of the matter is that the board has to do certain public things. And so there was 10 minutes there where there was just sort of some administration. But she explained what was going to happen first.
She did a really good job.
Yeah, she explained what was going to happen. She kept that incredibly tight, like 5-10 minutes maybe.
Yeah.
And then immediately went into the issue. And so, you know, give everybody credit, Kaylin, for all that.
She chaired the meeting really well. And that, like you said, that kind of sets the tone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and even again, when it got hotter a little bit later, she tried to keep it going. But once it was over, once it was between 8 and 9, it just became a public discussion. And I think they did a good job of, like, letting that flow and then getting everybody out of there before the librarians came and kicked us out.
Yeah.
Because I was out in the hallway right as I came in and you were having that exchange with Leonard, and I saw the three librarians because they all wore like these black polos and like, so you could see the librarians coming down the hallway, and I'm like, we're getting kicked out of here. We're all getting chucked out of this room.
We're getting that warning, yeah.
But yeah, they did extend the time for comment, and it was great. I will say one last thing, and maybe this will be, and then we'll have some fun. The commenter that did criticize the board, while that was maybe misplaced, and I do appreciate the way the meeting ran, the larger point he made was important. If you're not prepared to break it, that was his words, then you might not be prepared to go to do what you have to do. Otherwise, everything just keeps sort of moving around.
Yeah.
And here's the way it meant. Here's what it meant to me, because it resonated with me. There's going to have to be a challenge to powerful institutions. There's going to have to be an appetite to push the envelope. To say, for example, on a police accountability board, the law says we can't do this, and we do this, but it doesn't say we can't do that. Or there's some other things that we can do that actually might get us more information that we need. And obviously you're going to get pushback on that. And you just do it anyway. That kind of stuff. You know, it says you can make recommendations. You can't make changes. But can you make a demand? How public can you make it? Can you make sure that 75 people come out, 100 people? That's what was so, like you said before, knowing that people will support it and come out, I think is important no matter what the change is. But that's why it resonated with me, because I think people think that there's, I guess it was what you said earlier. There's no, If the only reform that we get is blessed by the police interest, the institutions of the the law enforcement, then we're never going to get anything substantial. We're never going to get anything really tangible, concrete, that's really going to help solve the problem and get more credibility with the police, more safety,
right,
less violence, all that. Because the police don't have an interest in doing that.
Yeah.
Because they like to operate the way that things are.
Yeah.
And so you kind of have to, unless you can internalize that and know that the cops are not good faith partners, you're going to have to, in whatever, even in an administrative, executive way, challenge that. Then, you know, it's going to be very, very long road. Because
yeah,
I think that's what it's going to have to take.
I agree.
I'm not going to make fun of anybody from last night. And I said I wouldn't because it was funny. I did sort of, I don't know, tease Kevin a little bit last night. Because I didn't make comment. I knew I wasn't going to anyway. I didn't have anything to say. Everybody else said everything I would have said anyway. But I didn't, and when I walked out, I put my arm around Kevin. I said, notice I didn't make any comment or yell at anybody. He's here. He says, I got to be calm. I can't do, you know. And he's actually never really said that, but it's just funny to make everybody think that he's like, he's cracking down on me, you know. I'm like, this guy, I can't even do what I want to do now because of this guy. And he's just like laughing.
Yeah. Kevin's a good guy.
Yeah.
Shout out to Kevin.
So here we are, folks. These are the two things I want you to keep in your mind for this work. Next month at Leisure Elementary, there's going to be a Know Your Rights session. It's going to be basically a public forum as part of the Police Accountability Board. And then in August, the 23rd of August, we're having it's going to be 6 to 8 at Clifford Brown Walk. It's going to be live music, big performance, free food, free drinks, DJ, all that. And, we're just going to get information out about trying to tie this all to people who have really been impacted by it. Because they're still there, you know. Kiki starts to go on with her life. And Lakeisha starts to go on with her life. And so, like, you might have forgotten that every time the police sort of, like, fight anything we try to do, why we're doing it in the first place. Because that stuff, at some point, we got to stop that. And, you know, and they're still having, you know,
that hurt doesn't go away.
Their hurt doesn't go away because it's done. They did it. The cops, basically, they murdered their brothers. So, you know, we're going to try to tie that to the idea of action, of accountability, credibility, and transparency.
Yeah.
You know, because everybody seems to, and there was a little bit of this sentiment after last night's meeting, that because the board does not have subpoena power, investigatory power, or discipline power, that it's what Kowalka would call an EIF, the exercise in futility. And that's true. I mean, you can't, again, and this is why maybe having that sort of mindset that you're going to challenge the powerful, and that's how you're going to use the thing, and you're going to get people from the public to just come out, have it all over the place, all the stuff that they're doing, which is a model, I think. And so, yeah, I mean, you have to get over the idea that they don't have this power yet, because maybe we'll get it. Especially if people come out like they came out last night.
Yeah.
Well, you know, this has to be a sustained, you know, sort of sustained thing. It's going to be very difficult.
Can I read something?
Of course.
The only kinds of fights worth fighting are those you are going to lose, because somebody has to fight them and lose and lose and lose until someday somebody who believes as you do wins. In order for somebody to win an important major fight 100 years hence, a lot of other people have got to be willing, for the sheer fun and joy of it, to go right ahead and fight, knowing you're going to lose. You mustn't feel like a martyr. You've got to enjoy it.
I know who it is. I think I'm almost certain, because I love that quote. Is it Tony Benn?
No.
It's not Tony Benn.
I.F. Stone.
I.F. Stone. Oh, that's right. The journalist, independent journalist, yes. I.F. Stone.
Yeah, from Philly, actually.
Yeah.
I was on a call.
That's so funny. I.F. Stone, if people don't know, was an independent journalist in the early and mid-20th century. People used to pay, like, for his weekly magazine. But he would go, I mean, he was a foreign reporter. He reported from, he did all kinds of stuff. But he was, like, a fully independent. They actually named an independent journalism award after him. Oh, but my. If you want to look up I.F. Stone.
Yeah. I was on a Zoom call around, like, Palestine advocacy and stuff. Over the fall, I think, actually, and somebody mentioned it, and like they kind of paraphrased it, and I was like, "That's deep." And I looked it up, and then I made like a little lock screen out of it because I feel like it's the reminder we need when we do work like this. Like, you always hope that you're gonna actually see, you know, your work come to some kind of fruition, but understanding that it likely won't, and that you're just doing it because it's the right thing to do and someone one day will benefit from it, has been a reminder that I've needed a lot this year.
That's exactly it. Yeah, because I think a lot of people look at it like, well, they do look at it like two sides. There's this side and that side, and we're going to get this and we're going to get that. My two sides are like the powerful institutions and the people dissenting. You know, capital and everybody else. And so that struggle, yeah, that's like, I don't expect that to end in my, you know, in my
right.
lifetime.
Right.
I don't expect to even make a dent in it. I'd like maybe people to have health care, everybody to have health care before I'm dead. Maybe, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know.
But the only way we can actually do that, and like it gets back to your point about like whether it's an exercise in futility or not, right? Like if you assume that it's futile, it will be. If you accept that it is, it is. And I think a lot of the time, people that we work with, like in institutions, they have resigned themselves to failure or to being like impotent. And it's like, all right, well, pack it up because you're not going to achieve anything. Like we have to have this, like, we need to be visionary in our imagination and not just, you know, resign ourselves to the status quo. So, you know, anybody who's done that, we ain't on the same team. They not like us.
Yeah. I think that's important. I think that that was something that I've always tried to stress too, is like, who's your partner? What are some people trying to do? Like, you think that these are our allies. They're actually not. They're trying to maintain sort right. of the balance. If there's somebody trying to maintain the balance between the violent police force and the people that they, then if you're trying to keep that balance, like, you're not on my team.
Right.
Like, there doesn't need to be. We have to eliminate one of those things. It's like, if you, like, there's no way that I can accept. You know, there's things that I'm not going to accept as part of the status quo. Like, I've said homelessness before. Like, there's things we have to address. We can't balance it between that and the needs of capital.
Right, right.
Or there's like, no, you know, we have to make sure that employment is at a certain thing, or we have to make sure that we have these financial instruments or healthcare you have to pay for that are going to drive people into the street, or skyrocketing housing prices. Like, we have to, like, there has to be, we don't have to accept any of that. Right. And I'm not going to.
Right.
And I don't think people, I think the criticism of that is just like utopian, and I don't think it is, actually. I mean, the dreaming is utopian, but the concrete things that you could do to sort of like support something like that are doable things.
Yeah.
So
I would,
like,
argue that, like, this idea that compromise is the solution or compromise is the end goal is dystopian. Like, I refuse to, you know, no, like, that's should never be the, like, if you truly believe what you believe, then 50% is not a win, and it shouldn't be the goal.
Yeah, and somebody has to say it. I just finished my second time through, because I listened to it this time, because I can't read, Cloud Splitter the novel, the nonfiction historical novel about John Brown.
Yes. Yeah. We were chatting about this.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, that's the lesson that I take from it, is that, yeah, I mean, even to this day, to some fashion, and certainly then, the Brown and what he stood for and his family and his associates, they looked crazy. People were like, this guy, I mean, they wound up being executed. But so how do we deal with the fact that he was absolutely correct?
Right.
How do we, because we did indeed fight a very bloody, very nasty, very violent civil war. So violence actually was necessary to break this deadlock.
Right.
And he knew it 20 years before. Well, he knew it 40, 50 years before, but
right.
He didn't start until the Kansas, Bleeding Kansas. Look it up. We're not going to get into it right now. But yeah, like how do we deal with that? There's a person looked crazy, very, very violent, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's like part of why it is really important for us to be students of history and like situate ourselves in like the greater historical context that, you know, we didn't just fall out of coconut trees.
When you said the greater, you know, historical context, I was like, exist, is she going to do it?
We exist in the context. All right, you're not going to.
Of all. That which came before us. Of course.
And I'm not even going to lie to you that I did not set out to make that joke. But, like, it's true. It's one of the most profound things I've ever heard.
I think that's why people.
Vice President
and this is
say,
not a new. This
and
is
that's
not a new.
She didn't say it. It was her mom who said it. But, like, shout out to her mom, right? She says, like, you think you just fell out of. But that's true, right? Like, we didn't. And I think when you do situate yourself in the context of all that came before you and all that, like, then you can kind of grapple with that. You can realize that, you know, when your colleagues say you're crazy or you're radical or, you know, nobody can work with you, you're in good company. You know, nobody's writing books about the people who went along to get along, got along to get along, or whatever. Like, That's not interesting. That doesn't
change
the world.
And some of the people that they write books about that go along to get along, they don't look good in them. Like, their family's not proud. We'll just say this. Like, 100, 200 years ago, their family's not very proud of those
books.
They'll
have, like, a very, like a higher ratio than normal of, you know, guys who don't pass on their last names. You know, like, their wives all just, like, no. Like, we're good. We're going to...
Yeah, you're like, you were
We're
going to
hyphenate
when?
And we're going to drop that name because we are not proud of this.
Yeah.
So, yeah, shout out to all the people that are listening who will be forgotten.
Yeah, exactly. Shout out to you guys. We got your ass.
Yeah. Better name a school after yourself before it's too late.
Yeah, at least they'll fight for that 100 years later. Yeah. Folks, I'm really interested in this guy. This guy's doing like the Wire stuff. He's got a beeper. He's got like a 911 beeper. Carl does. I don't know what he's working on, bro. He's got like sat phone. He came in here 2 weeks ago with a satellite phone. I was like, I think he might work for the CIA. Have we, like, he's done all his vetting on us. Have we vetted him? Has anybody vetted Carl? I don't think so. We might have, you know what?
Yes and no.
Okay. I don't think Carl's been properly vetted. We're going to have to get on that immediately. Until we do, left is best.